Radio City. John Grayson and Rob Ross with you once again. Why is this man laughing? I have absolutely no idea. But, Rob, you know, of all of the things we had lined out to talk about, there were so many that I wanted to jump right off with, and yet then all of a sudden we find out midweek that the woman who is sitting there on the 4th of July on the feet of the Statue of Liberty, who was arrested by I don't even know who, which police agency it was in New York that did it, is somebody you have personal interaction with?
Yeah, she's a neighbor, believe it or not. She lives in my building.
Well, New York is such a small town, you know.
Of course it is. And, you know, of course it's a random thing that she happens to be living in Staten Island, but she's not been exactly one of the people you would file under the good neighbor policy. You know, I think the words thank you if you hold a door open for somebody might be in order. I don't know. Or if you said good morning or hello to her, she would just give you a dirty look. So I've never been a big fan of hers.
Uh-huh.
The funny thing is, of course, you know, people are doing their whole – because it's such a time to be ballyhooing anything and everything does that thumbs the nose at the government or at, you know, American symbols or what have you. And, you know, she's not a hero. She didn't do anything special except ruin the day for a lot of people who spent a lot of money and waited a long time to get to the Statue of Liberty on right. July 4th. Let's start with that. She also cost the taxpayers a hell of a lot of money with her little antics by having to have first responders go in there and try and get her down safely. Let's start with that. And let's get to the meat of this. And the short version is, because I don't want to give her any more airtime. She is, in fact, a professional agitator.
Okay.
She's not some altruistic being. This is not a moment of passion and deciding to, you know, she went in there with a T-shirt on with a slogan on it. You know, it was all premeditated, and she's already got enough of a police track record. She's been arrested many, many times, including refusing to disperse when a peaceful gathering was, in fact, dispersed.
Right.
You know, she's just somebody that she's got, you know, if you see her on the local news, she's got a very smug look on her face. So let her have – she's had her 2 minutes. Time's up.
Yeah, professional professional gadfly. Yeah, interesting use of time's up. And that's another thing that we, you know, we've been watching this all week long is the response to this. And I've been dying to hear what you think of the fact that, you know, we talked about it when Sarah Sanders a couple of weeks ago was at a restaurant and a bunch of people caused a ruckus. Actually, it was the owner. It was the staff of the restaurant, and they had her escorted out. And then she tweeted about it and, you know, the mess that that made. But now we have another couple of names added to the list of Trump administration friendlies who have been accosted in public, one of whom was Stephen Miller. And apparently he was so upset that he threw away his sushi. And the other one was Mitch McConnell, who was just at a restaurant, I guess, yesterday or the day before. And a bunch of people started yelling at him and yelling, vote him out and all of this. And, you know, I'm going to let you have it. What do you make of all of this? Where are we with this protesting and, you know, going after these people in person?
Stephen Miller and Mitch McConnell, I don't care what people say to them. I don't feel bad for them. I don't feel it's wrong. Those are just two horrible human beings. I've hated Mitch McConnell for years and years and years. So anything that anybody says to him and gives him, you know, a bit of discomfort, I'm fine with it. Stephen Miller's just a horrible individual.
Yes,
so,
he is.
You know, listen, if somebody threw a brick at him, I wouldn't feel bad. As long as it hit him.
Yeah, right. Feel bad for the brick.
You're an idiot. That's all there is to it. Hit the target, you know? Don't throw at him, throw through him. That's the ethos. But when it's something
it's
like
wrist.
This, right. But when it's something like this, I do have a problem with it, because it's, once again, it's not just the arrogance of the individual doing it, but what the domino effect is, because this person is obviously not thinking about what the Statue of Liberty means to other people.
Right.
It's a really selfish act. But that's the way the left have come. It's all about them and getting their 5 minutes on camera. Listen, if a mob, because that's what it seems to have been, you know, a group did not want Sarah Sanders in that restaurant. A group didn't want Stephen Miller around. A group followed McConnell out to a parking lot yelling some very choice and very wise things like fucking turtlehead.
I love the turtlehead thing, yes.
Who hasn't called that motherfucker, you know, Tippy Turtle at one point or another? Or Cecil, or just some other derogatory turtle-like name.
Right. You know,
the bottom line is, that's different. That's group. It's in a private moment, in a private area. This is not a national monument on a holiday,
right?
When, with federal guards and so on all around, and families. And that's the long and short of it. She's, like I said before, she's not someone to applaud or give any more time to. Your time is up. Go the fuck away and move out of our building because we have enough assholes here.
Yeah, and I came up with something for the Stephen Miller thing. I think that because that poor man, isn't anybody going to help that poor man, had to throw away $80 worth of sushi. I think everybody should just take a raw fish and put it in the mail, send it to the White House, attention Stephen Miller, and we'll see what happens. I mean, we got to get the boy fed.
Why?
I just want to see hundreds of pounds of raw fish in that man's office.
Why spend the money on the fish? Why spend the money on the postage?
Ah, good point. He is not worth it. But yeah, no, it's just, it's so bad. And it's this bad reality show. And by the way, speaking of reality show, there's one that's supposed to happen again tonight with the naming of Donald Trump's nominee for the next Supreme Court justice. And I can't even bring myself to watch.
The only reality show I'll watch is Jersey Shore Family Vacation. I keeps it real like that.
Yes, indeed. So all of that's
Obama Shore season 2. So I'll give them a quick shout out and I'll watch that as well.
Right. Meanwhile, on the Supreme Court justice pick, Chuck Schumer decided to weigh in on this and see if he could do any influence peddling in Washington.
Oh, please. That's being kind. What it is brown nosing up to Trump. Another gadfly. Schumer, who always cries whatever direction the wind blows in and allows him to cry towards. You know, I know they're politicians, which automatically means they're full of shit.
Right.
It's a given. But could you at least take acting lessons first? Be quasi-convincing. I'm not asking for the world. Just con me for a moment.
Yeah.
Schumer could not be more full of shit than a toilet that's blocked up, you know? But going back to what you were saying before about, you know, the whole bad TV show thing and both sides, because as we know, there are a lot of bad hombres on both sides.
Yeah, of course. Yeah.
The thing is that we are firmly immersed now in a society that is completely embracing and, God help us, cementing vulgarity at every turn. People are crass. People are rude, lewd, and so ill-informed that it makes it impossible to even slightly say, okay, I didn't like the way you handled it, but I like what your message is.
Yeah.
No, what people are doing is they're turning average, normal human beings, rational individuals like you, like me, like the people that we know, completely off.
Yeah.
Because full radicalization has worn itself so badly out that there is no way in on this God's green earth that you are going to get me to champion a single solitary cause, be it on the left or the right. I really don't want to know. And that's not saying, you know, well, that means I'm not going to vote. That's my job. My job is to get out there and vote when the time comes. I don't need to stand around and wave a flag and scream at the top of my lungs and tell you, you know, who's to blame for this and wear a t-shirt with a slogan. No, my job is simply to weigh the pros and cons of the candidates that are placed before me and vote them either in or out or whatever the case is. But my job is to be a registered voter.
Right.
That's where the problem still lies. You have so many people who want to keep barking at you how to do things, who to vote for, but none of them are registered to vote. They're all too lazy to go and simply get online, which they're all good at doing and being, especially on Facebook, but not popping up their local elections board.
Right. Yeah, it's all online, folks. I mean, it's not like it's real hard to figure out, you know? The information is not hidden.
Well, the thing is, it's harder for them to get off Facebook and do something genuinely productive rather than, you know, actually act upon what is necessary.
Well, right. And in keeping with that theme of bad hombres on many sides, there is something else, and it actually has to do with the press. because it happened again. And I'm not sure where. I think it was probably in the city or close to it, in New York or somewhere in that vicinity, but I could be way off. Either way, long story short, a woman of Puerto Rican descent rented a little picnic area to have a picnic with her family. In walks probably 60-year-old white racist dickhead, because the woman is wearing a T-shirt that is in effect the Puerto Rican flag on the T-shirt, you know, up and down. And so 60-year-old racist dickhead starts yelling at her and telling her she shouldn't wear that shirt in America. Now, aside from the obvious, that is America. You know, Puerto Rico is still part of the country, last I heard. Aside from the obvious, this now has become national news, and it's on the foot, on the heels of all of these incidents where the little girl got yelled at for selling water, and the kid got yelled at for mowing the lawn, and the cops were called on him. So every time something like this happens, we hear the same thing. Oh, this is Trump's America. It's Trump's fault because he's made them emboldened. And I've come to a conclusion. I think that's bullshit. And I think it's bullshit because it looks at the past through rose-colored glasses, like we always have a tendency to do. Because guys like that didn't hassle women in parks 8 years ago? Yeah, they did. Those guys were around. But it didn't make national news. It makes national news now because it's part of a narrative that says it's all Trump's fault. But there were racist dickheads running around doing stuff like that forever. We didn't, you know, Trump didn't make them come out of the closet. They were never hidden. Those guys were shy before? Oh, come on.
Let me put it to you this way. For all the retards on both sides of the political fence, there's something called the Civil Rights Museum. Let's start there.
Right.
You know, let's start with something called the Ku Klux Klan. Remember them?
Yeah. Right.
End of story. But again, you brought it up perfectly and you placed it firmly in the way that it should be framed. It's part of a narrative.
Yeah.
And the way the press are approaching everything, of course, they'll spin the narrative however it suits the story to be spun. I place no trust in the press. You know, there is fake news. I'm not being facetious when I say it. There's definitely fake news on both sides. You know, the left is trying to paint the Statue of Liberty woman as being something that she is completely not.
Right.
But they don't want it brought forth that she is, in fact, a professional agitator. You know, every time Donald Trump turns around, again, he puts his foot in it. So there's no escaping it for him. I don't foresee him ever having the awakening. And I know that's a big stretch of a word when concerned with Donald Trump, but I don't foresee him having an awakening and going, maybe I should really just stop for a moment. And if I want to show these people that I am not only worthy of this job, but worthy of their trust, you know, and I know that sounds really, really far-fetched. Maybe I need to just kind of be a bit better as a human being on the public stage. But it's impossible for him.
Right.
You know, I hate to say it. Everybody loves a villain. You know, they do. They love, they eat, you know, this is basically WWF wrestling / AWA wrestling / NWA wrestling. You know, Donald Trump is the Nick Bockwinkle of the White House.
with none You're giving of the him too much credit for brains.
And vocabulary.
Yeah, right.
Because lest we should forget, Mr. Bockwinkle, God rest his soul, was the man who called wrestling fans recalcitrants and knuckle draggers.
Yes.
So, you know, the minute you use a word like recalcitrant and then you put it next to Donald Trump, who is indeed one of those mouth breathers, it won't work. But the thing is, if he were to just stop and not be so bombastic about everything, not be Donald Trump.
Yeah.
He might be able to do a little more than what he's already been doing by swinging blindly in a hall of mirrors, because that's what he does.
Yeah.
He is the proverbial bull in the china shop.
Right. And it's not getting any better. But then again, it's not really seemingly doing him very much harm. And, you know, the other piece of that is that he isn't very bright at all. He's not very eloquent. He is verbose, but spewing out a lot of words doesn't necessarily mean that you're able to elucidate them into some kind of, you know,
cohesion.
Exactly. Yes. So you end up with something like the flap that happened earlier this week when he mentioned the Me Too movement in one of these bizarre campaign rallies, and people went off the deep end and said, oh, he's mocking the Me Too movement. What he was talking about, and I'm not defending him because he's a dumb shit, but what he was talking about was Elizabeth Warren and going after her and doing the whole Pocahontas routine and said, you know, if she's the nominee, I can't wait for the debates. I'm paraphrasing. And we'll toss a DNA test at her and tell her if she takes the DNA test, we'll pay her $1 million to her favorite charity. It's this bizarre stream of consciousness rant. And then he says, we'll toss it really lightly because this is the Me Too era. Because somehow the Me Too era is equated in his head with tossing DNA tests really hard at women. I don't know what that means. But, you know, it gets worse when you actually read the thing, because it's so completely incoherent that to even say that he was mocking the Me Too movement is false, because it's impossible to tell what in God's name he was saying.
Thus, as we try desperately, that was really well done, by the way.
Thank you.
Kudos to you for that. The thing is, you're trying to make silk out of a sow's ear, you know?
Rationalize irrationality.
Yeah, I mean, you can't. You can't translate. It's like I still don't understand the Elton John bit either. I haven't been able to decipher it.
Right.
So, you know, listen, I'm a college graduate. You're a college graduate. We're both reasonably intelligent human beings. We can't make heads or tails of this. That's all there is to it. I can't go any further with it. What else am I supposed to say?
Exactly.
You know, I can't give insight where I can't extract it.
Right. If you can't decipher it, there's no way to interpret it. So, yeah, it doesn't even bear any more, just like the woman at the Statue of Liberty, any more airtime than we've given it already. So on to the fun stuff, because we do have fun stuff. And there is music news. There's also sad news out of the world of broadcasting. And I hate to get to the fun stuff and then talk about Ed Schultz dying. But Ed Schultz, longtime MSNBC, boy, reporter, anchor, what didn't he do? Passed away suddenly. Oops. Yeah, died last week. And it just, you know, again, out of nowhere. I don't know that anybody was on Ed Schultz death watch.
When was the last time I even saw him? It was probably right around the time that he was kind of squeezed out to make room for Rachel Maddow.
Right. Right.
You know, yeah, the so doyen of the left.
That's a fair few years ago.
Yeah. I mean, he was one of the mainstays of MSNBC when it was Olbermann.
Yep.
And him. And, oh, God, blowhard Chris Matthews. you know, like everything else, all you have to do is look at his body of work. It speaks for itself. But then again, he was one of those actual journalists, you know. He was from the, dare I say it, the Edward R. Murrow school of doing the work, putting in the hours, doing the research, verifying, you know, the way it's supposed to be.
Right. And
his ilk are dying off, unfortunately.
Yes. And we've talked so many times about losing actual news people. And I'm trying to think of the last guy who was the young one, you know what I mean, at the time. Who really made a difference and who really put that ethic on display. Peter Jennings.
When Rather took over the CBS Nightly News from Walter Cronkite, you know, he still had a full head of black hair.
Right.
And suddenly how many years went by? 30 years? Something akin to that?
Yeah.
Before we started having the revolving door of half-baked hosts. It might have been 25 years. It was around 1980, 81 that he took over. And I never found his reporting to be fluffy. Never. You know, whether it was on the Nightly News or as part of the 60 Minutes team, whatever the case was. Even now, he has that show, The Big Interview, on Access Network. He still asks not your typical questions of his interviewees. And I like that. I like the fact that he still he still approaches things with a, let's not play safe. I'm going to ask you pointed questions, or I may ask you questions you don't expect.
Right.
But they're done with the notes and the knowledge right there.
And like him or not, he is one of that dying breed who would actually jump into the middle of a fight to cover it, like he did in the 68 Democratic National Convention in Chicago. So, yeah, if you haven't seen that video, go check that one out.
He's getting clubbed out on the floor.
Yeah, get the tar beaten out of him for the news.
Now that we're talking about, you know, because everybody likens the last 2 years politically to 68. Who was the mayor of Chicago at the time?
Daley, right?
And what was his party affiliation?
Yeah, Democrat.
Dun, 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 dun.
Uh-huh, exactly. So, again, it all comes full circle in so many different ways.
Such hypocrisy.
Yes, indeed.
And oh, by the way, on the entertainment news side, apparently the great Tab Hunter passed away today also.
No kidding.
At the age of 86, yeah. But he was 86. He had a good life, and he was quite well-beloved. And let's face it, he resurrected and saved his career and made himself an even bigger legend, never mind the Hollywood heartthrob stuff of the 50s when he was paired up with Divine.
Yeah, right. Oh, too much. Yes, again, sad goodbyes all the way around. There are a couple of things going on in music. And we had lined something out, and I want to give you this over to you because I know there's a rant involved in all of this as well. But where we ended off last time was with you giving us a teaser on A Fragile Tomorrow.
Yes. New single is called Dig Me Out, and it came out Friday, and it was premiered exclusively on Popdos. I have to say, for the first time, I'm still not sure I like this track.
Okay.
I don't know if it's because I've, like everybody else who likes a band, pigeonhole their bands into a certain vein, but then again, Be Nice, what was it? Be Nice, Be Careful,
right?
Yeah, right. Was very REM, big star poppy. Whereas Make Me Over was 70s rock.
Mm-hmm.
This one goes into a terrain, I'm not sure, I don't know if it's that I'm not comfortable with them doing it, or if it just sounds uncomfortable in general. They're going into a weirdly ambient dance feel that's more keyboard heavy with guitar textures in it without so much of them playing in your standard, dare I say, a pop song formation.
Okay.
It's one that it's either going to have to grow on me, or I'm just going to have to say, okay, for once, I don't dig this one, but I need to live with it more. I do. It's not, it doesn't present itself as friendly as the last two records. And the album will be out in a couple of weeks, I believe. It's still as yet untitled, so let's stay tuned for that and find out where that, you know, what the name of the album is and when it'll be out. But yeah, this one, like I said, go and listen to it. You may dig it, you may not. I don't know. I mean, I think the world of those guys. I don't know if they're overreaching. You know, don't forget, Dominic Kelly has gone from behind the drums to now playing keyboards.
Yep.
That may have something to do with the shift, but I know that they were also listening to a lot of dance music too. Sometimes a rock band, as much as you enjoy listening to dance music, shouldn't delve into it. You know, you can make funky grooves like the Stone Roses did, for argument's sake.
Sure.
But I just feel like this one was overreaching a little bit.
Okay. Yeah, well, and there's the rest of the album to consider as well. So, what we hear on the rest of that, who knows?
Okay, I got breaking news for you before we get to my rant. A gentleman named Brett Kavanaugh has been selected for the Supreme Court. A politically connected member of Washington's conservative legal establishment, which will set off a furious confirmation battle.
Yes, it will. And I love the fact that
surprise, Enterprise.
You're right. Going all the way back to what we were talking about just about 10 minutes ago with Mitch McConnell, one of the things that he was bitching about on the floor of the Senate either today or, I guess it would have to be today, was the Democrats' obstructionist tactics on this whole Supreme Court thing. And it's like, really, Mitch? You want to complain about the other side being obstructionist when it comes to the Supreme Court? Stick it up your ass.
Yeah, really, fuck you, McConnell. You know, as much as I don't like Barack Obama, I really hate Mitch McConnell. I think I hate Mitch McConnell more than any other politician.
Yeah.
I hate him more than Stephen Miller. I certainly don't, I don't hate Trump as much as I hate McConnell. I've always despised McConnell for what he is, and that is a completely – he's a shifty little weasel.
Uh-huh.
Really is. And the fact that he hasn't lost that seat yet – boggles my mind.
Interesting little side note on Brett Kavanaugh, by the way. Yes, exactly. Yeah, on Brett Kavanaugh, just one interesting little side note. He comes from the District of Columbia circuit. So,
just a state, for God's sake.
He comes from the D.C. circuit, and Trump picked him for the Supreme Court. No shit.
Wow.
Yep.
So at least it wasn't Jeanine Pirro.
Oh.
When that name came up, or of course Rudy, Anyway, so where were we going with this?
Oh yeah. Right. So
we're in the middle of fun stuff now. We won't
get sidetracked for the Supreme Court of all things.
Exactly. Because even though it's meaningful, and what we're talking about is fluff, I can only do just so much of this without starting to have my teeth be set on edge.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean, I lived through the Carter years, and the albums that came out during those years still mean a whole hell of a lot more to me than Carter does. So, it's not completely fluff.
Thank you. Because how many people have suddenly deified Jimmy Carter? I'll tell you what.
Or any of them. I mean, Reagan, too.
Yeah, but Ronnie was Ronnie,
Yeah.
Carter was an asshole. There's the difference. One term and you're out of work tells me a lot. And, my parents voted for Carter, and boy, did he. De Blasio is Carter all over again with even less charisma.
Yeah.
And Carter had very little of that. All he had was his Mr. Rogers sweater.
Yeah, and those teeth.
Oh. My heart. Who doesn't?
Yeah, I want to know who he was lusting after. See, that's the part of the story we never got to learn.
I know. That was the Playboy interview, wasn't it?
Yes, it was. And, so where we were was getting into a talk about what's going on with the way that things are presented to people like you and me, because I get 100 pitches a day via email. I get probably 30 or 40 by mail, and I get another couple that just send me unsolicited manuscripts, books and shit for author interviews.
I can't count up how many emails come in daily, nightly, okay? Physical mail, numerous packages, either in the mailbox or, dropped off at the door. All unsolicited. That's fine. However, what I find really off-putting is there, because it happened with a very recent, a publicity company that I have worked with now basically for the better part of 5 years, in the 5 years that I've been with Popdose, sent, as they usually do, yet another unsolicited EP to listen to. They sent an email with an EP, and it looked interesting because it was an EP, of a dancey artist. And I listened to it, and I thought, okay, I'll premiere a track, give it some play before the week before it comes out, and I posted it on Popdose. And mind you, the person who sent it to me is the head of this firm.
Uh-huh.
He's the main publicist. Some woman from the firm wrote me this very terse email saying, where did you get that from? And I said, it was sent to me by your director. As he was doing for the better part of the last 5 years.
Uh-huh.
And she made this big fuss about it. And, we would like you to take it down because the record company, first of all, there's no record company. It's some, little hodgepodge company like everybody else has nowadays.
Yep.
You know what I mean? Now, I've been through this before. This already had gone up. It was on Popdose.
Yeah.
And I said, fine, you want to take it down, I want you to know that going forward, we will no longer accept anything from you. I'm not going to put up with this kind of shit anymore from these people.
Yeah.
Here's what these pseudo publicists don't seem to understand. One, you're hurting the band or the artist. Okay. Second of all, you're a little tiny company. You've just cost yourself 3,000 on the daily basis readers from seeing this, from possibly listening to it and maybe being interested in it. Thus, again, going back to hurting your artist because you're kissing up to a non-record company. The lack of professionalism shown there is beyond appalling. But it goes hand in hand with the kind of shit that most of these people foist out onto this, you know, this very limited market of writers and people who are even willing to sit down and listen to new material. And that is, do the work and learn how to spell.
Right.
Because I really can't deal with any more of these emails written by people who, how did you get out of high school, let alone get a job of any kind? I mean, I'm sure most of them are, you know, these little gibbering monkeys who are really just interns and not full on. But it does happen with a lot of these publicists, which is why I won't give them the time of day anymore.
Yeah.
You know, when I get a package from a certain publicist or two, but a certain publicist in particular, it always has his company's, you know, his company's, his publicity company's logo and on the mailing label. So I know exactly what, you know, who it's from. He always sends it with the notion that there's enough hang time for me to possibly give it consideration, listen, and review, whether it's a DVD, an album, whatever the case may be. He always includes in the physical package the actual CD. He sends, you know, if there's little tchotchkes to go along with it as well, he's always really generous about that. And a full, proper bio with the company logo, the name of the performer, you know, with the headline, the date, you know, for immediate release, the bio story, and the background of this particular release. The way it's supposed to be.
Right.
If he sends me an email about it, he will always include a high-res JPEG of the performer, a high-res JPEG of the artwork. If I don't know their website already, he sends the web link, and he always sends either a track or a video to go along because he knows how Popdos does their job. Because he reads the articles that are written and posted about his artists and performers. That's how a professional operates. There are maybe a handful of those that I get.
Right. But you also hit on the problem because you mentioned the fact that, you know, these are the firms that you deal with, the publicity firms that you deal with that are sending you this stuff are small operations and they're hurting their only source of income. But here's the problem is that when you worked at Atlantic Records, how big was your publicity department?
It was several factors. It was two separate floors because you had publicity and then you had international publicity.
Right. And now you're not dealing with Atlantic Records publicity. You're dealing with Billy Bob's publicity shop who has a contract with whatever record company or whatever artist is trying to put the music out. It's the same thing with books. It's the same thing in just about every industry. I mean, HarperCollins and Penguin and all of these, they must have fired everybody. Because yeah. The people that worked for those giant corporations were professionals. They were good at what they did.
And these people are just not. It makes, you know, I hate to say it, but when I read so many of these emails, you can almost get that intuitive feeling from the moment you see the subject line that you're not going to want to even bother.
Right. Because what it says is, this is my first real job.
If it's a paying one.
Yeah.
Now, the thing is, there are bands that do their own publicity. Listen, there was a band that I did pieces on, and they had used a publicist for one particular release. And this publicist could not grasp the simplest of requests, needing the photo of the band, the, you know, the album cover, a link, you know, to either the song or the video. I mean, it was ludicrous. And she could not get her shit together. And, you know, I begrudgingly, and I'm saying begrudgingly, because I set the date, I gave her the date of when it was going to run, and then the 12th hour she comes back, no. You know what? Now if you come back after the fact, fuck you.
Right.
I'm leaving it up. It's because we all work off of each other's publishing schedules at Popdos, you know? It is an incredibly impolite thing to do to your colleagues. And we've been doing this for a long time. I've been there already 5+ years, you know. Others have been there since the beginning. So it's not like we're novices to this. Right. And it's not like we have a holier-than-thou attitude. It's just, if you've been working with us for a while, you know the drill, for God's sakes.
Yep.
You know, get your shit together. You know, and do not come at me, whatever you do, with that over-smarmy hype. That is not going to get your foot in the door, you know?
Right.
And that's the lack of professionalism that's going through the whole – it's not PR. It's the whole music specifically – well, you know what? The whole entertainment publicity machine.
Yeah, exactly.
Dumbest people that you don't have to pay to do the work and to get the work done in the most embarrassing way with no results.
Right. And if your only job is to know your product and you don't know your product, that, I mean, what else do you need to say?
Oh, I know what to say. Put it in your mouth and blow your fucking brains out. But do not clutter my email inbox with garbage.
Yeah, that's right. Hedberg had his head screwed on straight. There's no doubt about it. And, no, that wasn't Mitch Hedberg, was it?
If it wasn't Hedberg, maybe it was Hicks?
Hicks, yes. Yeah, right.
The thing is, though, there are so many publicists out there who I know who are so good at what they do. But the thing is, they're still good at what they do because they're older. They're from the same school and training as we are.
Yep.
But I don't count them with these folks because they're professionals.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, there's night and day difference.
So yeah, it was a sort of rant, but it's just a perspective of, you know, you try to do this. And part of the reason why I haven't really presented anything new is nobody has sent me anything that's dynamic enough for me to want to talk about at great length when we've got so much else going on in the world. You know, you want to read the stuff I write on Popdos, go to Popdos. And by the way, I will finish it, this segment off with this bit. There's a publicity company in England who have been sending me emails since maybe 2014. At no point have they ever addressed me by my first name.
Right.
Okay. They always send me these half-assed, ham-handed emails that starts off, "Hi, Ross, can I put this forward with Popdos?"
Oh.
The answer is no. If you're going to that website, you know my name is not Ross. It's Rob. Although it's your highness to you, you fucking peasant.
Yeah.
Seriously, if you can't be bothered to address the person you're emailing with the correct name, you really need to check out now.
Right.
And you'll never get a piece from us. Ever.
I love the ones that start off with me. The ones that start off, "Hey, John, how are you? We have a guest we think would be perfect for your show." And invariably, the ones that say that are the guests I wouldn't book if you had a gun to my head.
"Hey, hope you had a great weekend. How's everything going? Speak soon." Yeah, fuck right. Off.
Yeah, go get a job at Chili's where yeah, you right. should be.
No, because I kind of like Chili's and I don't need these mongoloids going out there and fucking up my order.
Now, at the same point, there is some good news out of the music industry. You said it had been a while since he posted anything because there's just not that much out there. But I'll tell you what, when you do post something, it is an absolute home run. And we have one to talk about this week from Django Haskins. Not surprising, but surprising in terms of the quality.
Well, first of all, thank you for what you just said. That made me feel very good. That really did. And it's funny because the summertime, you usually don't think of as being a time for new music to pop up and to have premieres, but lately I've got a lot of them coming up, having come up already and on the page and going forward. But, you know, I have to tell you that track, Snakes in the Seaweed, tell me you didn't sit there with your mouth dropped open.
Yeah. Yes.
Fucking phenomenal. Sorry, Django. I'm sorry I had to use that word to emphasize how good that song is, brother, but it killed, you know? It's an amazing album that he's got coming out very shortly called Shadow Lawn. It's mm-hmm. his first solo album in 17 years because in most of that time he's been either writing and performing and touring with the Old Ceremony, the Big Stars third shows, Au Pair, who we absolutely loved last year. That's yep. his side project with Gary Louris from the Jayhawks, and Fatherhood. So now is the time for him to actually do something on his own. And it is not your typical, it's not Baroque. It's
so
not,
don't fix it.
Right. Well played, sir. Well played. It's what it is a very modern American, almost like a travelogue. But that's the album. Now, Snakes in the Seaweed is what Django himself considered the most rock track.
Huh,
So
okay.
this is one of the this is one of these buckle up because this is going to be a fun ride kind of albums.
Yeah.
And the beauty of it is, apart from the sound, that bass line that carries the song, and the almost it's going to sound weird to use this word when talking about a banjo, but the eeriness of the banjo.
Tell me about it. The way that the effects are done on that banjo, it's got this really ethereal kind of reverb, but it's got a like almost a humidity to it. It's hard to describe. It's just incredible.
Yes, and then add to that the vocals, the very you want to talk about ethereal vocals of another friend of ours from the North Carolina scene, Skylar Gudash, who happens to be on this track as well.
You never talk about your feelings, never say nothing that you really mean. Never talk about your feelings, never say nothing that you really mean. You really mean, I really mean. It might be too late for all of that. Now I'm afraid.
I mean, it's this wonderful mixture of, I don't want to use the G word, but it's sort of like an American Gothic kind of feel to it. You know what I mean? Not in a fruity Bauhaus or Cure kind of way,
Right.
like really old-timey chilling. And you gotta love the fact that the song has so much natural, genuine ambiance to it. That's what ambiance is in a song, when it actually makes you think, it makes you feel, and you're thinking about what those feelings are and how the song itself captures that feeling.
Yeah, and it starts out, and I mean, anytime you've got that sort of detuned slide guitar thing going on, that real swampy blues, I'm gonna be there. And immediately this one grabbed me, and there's a couple of things about it. The banjo was one of them that really stood out, and there's something that happens during the chorus, and I'm gonna have to listen to it another couple of times because it's really wetted up with that sort of distant reverb, but it sounds like there's a very sparing use of background vocal. And it just, when it hits, boy, you said eerie on the banjo. When that hits and it just sort of comes out of the background and reverberates into existence, it is the coolest thing.
Oh, I think, by the way, he's using a baritone guitar on
Is that
this.
what it is? Okay,
I think
yeah.
his two main weapons was and the banjo was bass and baritone guitar. So wait until we dissect the album. You're gonna love this.
Oh yeah, I can already feel this one coming. So yes, Django, big time. Django Haskins, you got to check out Snakes in the Seaweed. It's there for you, the review elsewhere on popdose.com. And boy, it feels good to do that again, to just talk about a good song.
See, the beauty of it is, though, it's always, and this is what everybody who's in bands especially always seems to forget, it's not about you, it's about the song,
Yep.
Now, in this case, it's done by one person without the necessity of having a band. But what he's done here is he's basically laid a feast out for you, because in the sparseness of it, if you think about it, because it's not overproduced and it's not over-instrumentalized, he's laid out a feast
Yeah.
with just a little bit.
Right.
Now that takes talent.
Now I know it's been nigh on a few days since last we spoke here on the Radio City podcast. So, what did you end up doing with your 4th of July?
Absolutely nothing, which was wonderful beyond words. I had Tuesday off, so we ran a couple of errands, and that was it. And Wednesday, just stayed at home, relaxed, enjoyed. And interestingly enough, it was really quiet. Like barely any
Yeah,
fireworks.
same here.
Now, I don't know if it was because the weather was magnificent, by the way, so I can't fathom what it was that prohibited it. But nonetheless, we spent it. Of course, I watched 1776. I watched, I was immersed in what I like to call my idea of the ideal America, a musical trip through our wonderful nation. So, REM. Watch a documentary on REM. Nothing Can Hurt Me, Big Star. Respect Yourself, The Story of Stax Records. 1776, you know, Jersey Shore. just being American, you know.
Good man. Yeah, we didn't do much of anything either. I think we went to the movies, and I can't for the life of me remember what we saw. But we did get to go to the new dinosaur movie, the new Jurassic Park movie, and it was fine. Bryce Dallas Howard's cute.
Yeah, she's not bad. I always mix her up with Jessica Chastain.
They look almost identical to each other. Yeah,
interchangeable redhead cuties.
Yep.
The one movie that I will go see is Ant-Man.
Ant-Man and the Wasp. Yeah, our movie guy, my producer Max Foisy, reviewed that one for us. He said, "Yeah, in the context of the Ant-Man story, it's fine."
I mean, I love the first Ant-Man. I love the fact that this, the title of this Ant-Man and the Wasp is a metaphor for the little Jew and the chick's a girlfriend.
Right.
Because this is like the ultimate Jewy superhero movie. Paul Rudd, Michael Douglas, in the first one, Corey Stahl as the bad guy. It's like Jew.
Yep.
You know, it's like everywhere you look, here a Jew, there a Jew. You know?
In Hollywood. Weird.
Yeah, but they changed their names out there so you can't spot them.
Yeah, that's the only way.
So that's the only movie I have any inkling for seeing. One, because I like Paul Rudd. Two, because my wife wants to see it because she loves the Marvel Comics things. And you know, because Ant-Man itself I actually like the most out of all of the Marvel movies I've seen thus far.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
It was the one that entertained me the most. Probably because it was funny. And because he's likable. You know?
Exactly. Yeah. And along those lines, we saw Deadpool. I didn't see the first Deadpool until a couple of weeks ago, honestly, and haven't seen Deadpool 2 yet. But we figured if we're going to go see the second one, we might as well, you know,
watch the first.
Right. And it had its moments and it was very funny and all of that, but it was much darker than Ant-Man was.
Well, the thing is, he kind of browbeats the whole, you know, fuck being the every other word out of his mouth.
Right. Right. Yeah.
It's like, okay, I get it. You're the anti-superhero. You know, there's no, you know, with Ant-Man, there's no message. I don't want a message. It's a comic book story,
yep.
You know. On the other side of things, we watched on Saturday night on HBO the Justice League. DC should just give up the idea of making any more of these movies because they're terrible.
Yeah.
They're boring. They're flat. They're lifeless. Yeah, I can watch Gal Gadot all goddamn day. But she can't save a shitty script.
No. Or, you know, just a shitty concept and a bad story. So, yeah.
And I'm sorry, but the character of the Flash, I wanted to see a beatdown on that little creep. Wow.
Yeah, when the heroes are the guys you hope get their shit handed to them, there's a problem.
Yeah, he was an asshole. And I'm sorry. Is it my imagination? But isn't Aqua Guy kind of supposed to be wearing like a green uniform?
Yep.
Okay. Well, this guy didn't. And he didn't have blonde hair either.
See, this is why they need to consult you and me on this stuff.
Well, they should just get the fuck out of the game. There's your consultation. Pay me.
Well done, sir. That's about the most useful information they could possibly have.
I mean, really, it's just it smelled of boredom, and it's always movies are always dark too, so
yeah, there's that feeling of, do we have to do this? Watching all the actors going, are we really, fuck it. But on the subject of stuff we're watching, news came out, and I think it came out either today or yesterday, that for the first time, Netflix had a month where they beat out everybody. More people watched Netflix last month than watched cable or satellite TV or broadcast TV. That's an incredible turn. And I don't know how far into the streaming thing you've gotten, how many of the streaming-only shows, because, I mean, everybody goes and streams movies and TV shows like, you know, that we saw 20 years ago. But in terms of the stuff that Netflix produces originally, that Hulu produces originally, are you binging any of that stuff? Have you gotten there yet?
The first time I consciously binged on a TV show was when Starz was running that that series Boss.
Yeah.
With Kelsey Grammer.
Right.
I binged the first season, watched it an entire day. It was fantastic. The problem was the second season was awful. There was only two seasons, and boy, they just fell right off the cliff with the second one. It just got stupid really fast. aside from that, I don't have the time and I don't have the patience after a while. I don't consider breaking out the various seasons of Jersey Shore on DVD and watching disc one, disc two, disc three of that particular season is binging. It was just kind of a way of passing the evening.
Right. Right. Yeah. It was just background noise.
Very briefly, when the new series came on, Jersey Shore Family Vacation, for whatever reason, it seemed to strike a chord with my wife, who never watched the original show. She found it charming, she found them to be endearing, and she was curious about the original series. We would occasionally be able to catch an episode here and there, either on demand or on MTV, but they were always cut, and MTV does this really fucked up thing where they're showing a show, and it's like, well, we're running late, so we're going to go right into the next show. It's like, what the fuck? Talk about a bunch of rank amateurs.
Yeah.
Her birthday was coming up, and I said to her, what do you want for your birthday? And she goes, you know what? I want to do a theme this year. I want the Jersey Shore box set. I want all the seasons on DVD. And then I want you to take me to TGI Fridays for a really mediocre meal and shitty drinks.
Nice.
So that's exactly what we did. But the thing is, I got her the Jersey Shore box set, and it was all five seasons, and it was entertaining as hell. But the thing is, we were watching them, spread out over a period. I can't binge. That's just not me. I know everybody's got this major hard on for The Handmaid's Tale, but I'll leave that and just have done with,
We got two episodes in and I got bored.
People make more out of what really isn't there. But that seems to be also another symptom of our times. Everything has reached that crescendo of it's the Emperor's New Clothes.
Right.
Don't believe the hype. Whatever you want to call it.
Yeah.
Bullshit.
We started one and actually finished it. We did binge watch it, now that I think of it, a show on Netflix called, or you know what, now that I'm thinking about it, it might be Amazon. Yeah, one of the two. With Stana Katic, who was on Castle. She was with Nathan Fillion on Castle. And she, I guess, executive produced this thing and stars in it, and it's called Absentia. And it's a mystery, it's a murder mystery thing, and they kind of play with you over the course of it. It's a 10-episode arc, like most of them are. And they go through every mystery trope. And they must have meant to, but it becomes apparent to you after a while that they're screwing with you by saying, okay, I know who you think it is. I'm going to spend this entire episode making you think it's that person and then pull the rug out from you at the very end and then on to the next episode. And it was fine. I think it ended lamely, but when you're doing something like that, that has it's like you build a show around a premise like that of saying, okay, this is how we're going to build this thing. Now let's go do it. It can tend to fall apart at the end, but it was interesting enough as it went along. I just wonder how things like that with the thousands of other ones that are out there find an audience. You know what I mean?
Well, I'll tell you, I didn't get to read the article, but the headline is, it's the end of HBO as we know it, because apparently another new head who wants to do, I was like, you've already fucked HBO and Cinemax so badly, right, over the last 3 years.
It's over.
Anything you do is just kind of a moot point. Now, coming up next week is finally, 2 years after it was shot and a year after it was broadcast everywhere else in the world, it seems, is the second season of Outcast, which was that really wonderful, incredibly creepy series on Cinemax. This was the show that was on right after Quarry, which of course they canceled, and I will never forgive. I'm sure that this will be it, because they have to run the series.
Okay.
Because I don't think it's going to come back for a third season. Considering that it had been green-lighted for a second season before the first episode ever aired. But that's, part of, well, that's also them riding on the coattails of Robert Kirkman, who is the executive director of The Walking Dead.
Uh-huh.
They basically shat all over this show. And the thing is, The Walking Dead, I think, is also past its sell-by date. They're going to lose Andrew Lincoln, the star, this year. That's it. I mean, he's gone after the season. So
right.
How much more can you completely run it into the ground? We get it. There's zombies. Okay. If you get bit, you get dead.
Yeah. And how many years has that show been going on? Forget seasons. How many years has it been of The Walking Dead? 12?
I don't think it's been on physically that long, but maybe since around 2010.
It's got to be
7 or 8 years easy.
It's got to be, you know what? I think longer than that. I think it's got to be at least 9, if not 10, because,
Just so we you know, because we like to give you the facts.
I'm just going by who I was married to at the time.
October, Halloween 2010 was when it made its
2010,
debut.
Okay, so only 8 years. Huh, how about that?
But the thing is that they break them up into these seasons.
Right.
So they're on season coming up season 8. And so Andrew Lincoln's going to leave after season 9. You know, it's like, enough already. We get it. Enough with the zombie shows. Enough with the post-apocalyptic shows. Blah, blah, blah. So I don't have the stomach for it anymore.
So how you feeling about the World Cup?
I can't believe that the fucking English are in the semifinals along with the fucking frauds.
Uh-huh.
I want to see the goddamn Lions beat the goddamn frauds in the finals just so I can say, fuck you, England. We still have real football.
There you go.
Man's football. Okay? You think you guys are all cute running around on your goddamn, you know, soccer pitch and kicking a ball around. Ooh, that's a skill. No. Try putting on skates.
Right.
Do that, motherfucker. You're not so hot.
Well, and anything that makes the British really go that bananas can't be good.
The British don't need much to go bananas, for Christ's sake.
That's a good point. Yeah, yeah, I've watched some, but not very much. In fact, I think I've watched less of this World Cup than I did the last one.
But since you're bringing up sports, big shout out to Joey Chestnut, who wins yet again another Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Joey.
Which reminds me, yeah, since I asked you about your 4th of July, I guess that means you didn't spend it jamming 72 hot dogs into your mouth.
I'm not even going to.
I was this close to baiting you into that.
Not going to look at it, not going to smell it. Nope,
72? Man, I mean, I remember the first time I saw Clerks and I thought 37 was a lot.
That's so wrong. My mom's been fucking a dead guy for the last 30 years. I call him bad.
Right. Oh, man, too much.
Donkey show?
Miss my donkey. Oh, too much. But yeah.
It's interspecies erotica.
What does New York think of the Nathan's contest? Do New Yorkers give a shit?
I don't think so.
Okay, all right.
Just looking at one of those ads there, so what?
Uh-huh.
Look, would you go into Coney Island?
No.
End of story.
Not since the Warriors. I haven't been able to go to Coney Island ever since the first time I saw the Warriors.
All I have to say is, for all the hyperbole that people love to make about Brooklyn, you don't want to go to Coney Island.
That said, oh, man. So
it now brings us to In Our Heads.
Are we there? Or are we at In Our Heads? Good, good, good. Because I have an experience to relate and music to talk about with it. Because I was driving in this morning and it just popped up. And I don't know exactly what it was that had, you know, that triggered this one in my head. Although it's been one of my favorite songs forever. Say what?
Don't use the word triggered. I'll beat you with a bat.
That's right. I wasn't triggered in that way. No, no. Everything was fine. But I was listening to you're a big Star fan. I am as well. But I'm also a fan of another New York area band that had Star in their title, the band Stars. And they had a regional hit where I grew up back in about 1975 or 76 called Sing It, Shout It. And I have loved that song since I was a little kid. When I saw her, I was I can't really put them in the camp of being a one-hit wonder because it depended on where you lived. There were some places like New York where Stars had probably 4 or 5 songs that got decent airplay.
They were on Capitol, right?
Yes. And
black cover, like a really cheesy looking old fashioned Art Deco period star with the word stars written across it.
Right. With a Z on the end. Yes. The band that they're related to is the band that did Brandy, Looking Glass. Okay. There's a couple of guys who were in Looking Glass. One of them is Richie Reno, the guitar player, and they ended up forming Stars, I guess, right after Brandy became a hit. And even Looking Glass, back when they were still a thing, they were a much heavier band than that song would indicate, because everybody figured, oh, it's more easy listening 70s schlock. But the rest of their stuff was really good. And so Sing It, Shout It, and it was just there in my head. And then I remembered that part of the reason why it was there is that even as a power pop song that it is, it still reminds me of the same girl from when I was 8. and I know, I mean, we've talked about that connection so many times of you know, hearing a song and having a memory associated with it. And I haven't, the funny thing is about that song is I haven't even seen Beth DeVolley since I was 17. So it's been a very long time, but still, you know, she will always be to me associated with that song. And the picture I will see in my head is that of her in fourth grade, you know, it's just like, and by the way, I was in fourth grade too. It's not freaky and weird.
You know, shit. Because in other words, like, then I have to ask you, John, do you like Huey Lewis in the news?
Yeah, right.
In a very subtle manner.
But what are those songs that, I mean, the minute you hear it, you think of somebody, a girl or whatever, that you haven't seen in forever?
Bad, Bad Leroy Brown.
This story I got to hear.
Had a crush on consciously had a crush on in third grade.
Uh-huh.
Christine. And she lived down the block from us.
What was her name?
Christine.
Christine, uh-huh.
I mean, there was when I was like 5 years old, I had my first crush on a girl who lived around the corner, but I don't remember any songs being part of it. Her name was Andrea. Really pretty blonde girl, you know, bright blue eyes, blah, blah. But again, no songs.
Sure.
Christine was gorgeous. She was, you knew that, you know, if you saw her when we were in third, fourth, and fifth grade, she was going to grow up into a beauty.
Mm-hmm.
And she did. Fuck, Every Little Thing She Does Is Magic by The Police. I automatically think of my best friend in high school / the first love of my life.
Yeah.
Alicia. There's a period that I'm not particularly proud of. Someone.
I just like the setup to this story.
Well, I'll keep it simple because this is going to knock you right out of the chair. But I think of her, and you know, or I, if I hear the song "Hit Somebody" by Warren Zevon, yes. I think of her.
There were Swedes to the left of him, Russians to the right. A Czech at the blue line, looking for a fight. Brains over brawn, that might work for you. What's a Canadian farm boy to do?
Hit somebody.
What else can a farm boy from Canada do?
Hit somebody.
What's a Canadian farm boy to do?
Hit somebody.
What else can a farm boy from Canada do?
Because it's the double entendre of I was with her at the time and she was so into Warren Zevon.
Uh-huh.
And God damn, she is just somebody who really needed to be clubbed upside with a goalie stick.
Sherwood imprinted across her forehead backwards.
Man, woof. Yeah, of course. You know, they're songs, more than anything else, are to me equated with girls.
Oh, yeah.
That's how it goes, you know. Well, the whole point of making music was, you know,
to get girls.
Get a little trim, you know what I'm saying?
Sure.
Lap dance, you know.
Well, there was a you and I both lived in the game room, right? I mean, you spent a lot of time playing whatever video games and pinball machines.
I played them. Are you fucking crazy? I hated them. I had to sit there and watch. I had to sit there and endure it. You know, timeout. But I never played. I refused to play on principle. I am a man of principles, even in my teen years. I'll have you know, sir.
See, I wasn't in my teens yet, but that's just me giving you shit. No, I did. I mean, I would go cash my paycheck from Subway, $143 or whatever the hell it was. And that was a week's worth, by the way. So I'd go do that and then at least get a couple of rolls of quarters and head to the game room. And we had a bunch of them that we used to go to, but there was one in North Tampa called Main Street, and it was a cinema brew pub, one of the first ones, curiously enough. And, you know, just a little strip mall around it, but they had this amazing game room. And I used to spend time in there just every weekend if I could get away with it. And there was this girl, Allison, that I had a crush on. I got the hammer, too, by the way.
That's what I was about to say. You have a hammer. You're not having a crush.
You know, if I had a hammer.
This is making a darker turn than even I would.
I just, it's here in the room. So, but yeah, Allison was, you know, she was just a girl that I would, she was there all the time. So we would talk and I just developed a crush on her over the years. But every time I hear everybody, not everybody have fun tonight. The other one, Dance Hall Days by Wang Chung.
We was up in Vice in a dance hall days. We were cool on Christ. When I, you, and everyone we knew to believe, do, and share in what was true, I said, dance all days, love.
That's the one that, I, you know, I start thinking about that era, that time, and that place, you know, and there she is.
Well, it's funny. There's also a song, whenever I hear Jennifer Juniper by Donovan.
Oh, yeah.
I immediately think of this girl that I was, at that point we were adults anyway, this woman I was sort of involved with, her, because her name was Jennifer, and who I was completely in love with, who actually spurned me on to write so many really good songs that I was proud of. She turned out to be another, but, you know, that's, but then my closest friend in the world and confidant, her name is Jennifer, so I tend to spin it on to her instead.
Yep.
You know? But every time I hear I Want to Destroy You by the Soft Boys, I go back to thinking about that blonde woman who hit somebody is equated with. It's far more apt. You know?
Right. Well, and before we leave Jennifer Juniper, you got to realize that that song, too, was about one of the most beautiful women on the planet at the time that it was written. So,
whose sister happened to be one of the most perfect women that ever lived and yes. Had two great classics written about her.
Oh, more than that. How many songs were written about Patty Boyd?
The two that are really known.
Something.
Something and Layla.
And Layla, right. But Bell Bottom Blues was also written about her. Well,
it was written about her and his torture, you know?
It, right. And so, I mean, it was...
Fuck that guy.
But every song that was written about her was absolute gold. And Jennifer Juniper, which was Donovan's sort of love letter to Jenny Boyd, was equally so. So yeah, easy to associate a girl with a song like that.
The funny thing is Jenny Boyd, who married Mick Fleetwood and
yep.
suffered through his lunacy, is now a practicing psychotherapist.
No kidding.
Yeah. She wrote a book about it actually, which was reviewed on Pop Dos when it came out. And from all accounts, she's a really lovely person. Obviously, she's grounded. Her sister seems pretty grounded, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I
married two schmucks. That's what it boils down to. George, you had Patty. Fuck that. How do you fuck that up?
Right. Yeah. And your inclination to believe that of Patty Boyd, absolutely, I can confirm. Because we talked once for about 40 minutes, and she was everything you would want her to be. Except naked. So
listen, here's the bottom line. Deborah Harry just turned 73.
Uh-huh.
And I would still crawl 10 miles of broken glass just to stand in her garbage.
You are not alone, my man. Well, good. Another successful broadcast, another successful In Our Heads. And next week, you want to take the In Our Heads?
Sure. And you know what? Just for shits and giggles next week, I'm going to open the show because I got nothing better to do.
Fantastic.
We'll make it Sadist Hawkins Day, you know? Oh, and by the way, we forgot to mention the one big news of the week bit. That fuckhead Scott Pruitt resigned. We don't have to say that. We're rid of him. He was a fucking douche. Good. Now DeVos has to go. And then please do something about that horrible thing that you posted that picture of that made me go hysterically blind earlier. Oh, I've been waiting for this call all night, you fucker.
I don't even know who made that, but it's hilarious. It's a Walmart photo version of Sarah Huckabee, and it's just
Sarah fucking handlebars.
Sarah fucking handlebars. That's right, and it's fantastic. So thank you for noticing. And Rob Ross, have yourself a beautiful week, my man.
You too, brothers. Stay well, and we will do this again next Monday. Have a great week, folks. God bless.